Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss, and sitting next to me is the delightful one, Carla Dawson. How are you?
I am good. Top of the afternoon, evening to you.
And we got the mighty Z-Pack behind the glass. Z-Pack, the remedy of all things. Good
Who's
to have
very
you.
Happy today with a Bears victory over the Raiders.
Bears victory and a White Sox victory all in one day. Yeah, he caught me in a good mood today.
Okay, darn, you had to bring up the White Sox thing, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, he's in a good mood.
The elephant in the room, right? Yeah.
It is the elephant in the room. And that is a heated series now with Ryan Tepera's comments that the Astros might have been sign-stealing. And later this hour, we're going to get a chance to talk to Charlie Polillo, one of the wisest baseball analysts I've ever come across. And
he's on the ground in Chicago.
And he is on the ground in Chicago. We will get his take there. It is a little sensitive that you two are in the studio here together because, of course, Z-Pack, longstanding Bears fan, Carla Dawson, longstanding Raiders fan. You guys met on the field yesterday. Bears came out with the win. Quick explanation, Carla?
Distractions, the Gruden distraction. It's unfortunate. It happened. He owned it. But it's going to take a little bit for that locker room to gel and to get, you know, to get past this.
Yeah.
And Gruden can do it. I have no doubt he will. But it's a distraction. There's no doubt about it. And Justin Fields did enough to win, but his numbers weren't fabulous. But, hey, he's your starter, and he did what he needed to do. So credit to him.
Z-Pack, you liked what you saw out of Justin Fields yesterday?
Good, not great. You know, it's going to be a learning experience every week. You know, with a rookie quarterback, there's going to be various ups and downs. I was more impressed with the defense
That's
yesterday.
That's what I think.
You know, it was Oakland. I almost just called them Las Vegas. They really couldn't just get anything going and kind of neutralized Carr.
Yeah, Khalil Mack was in that backfield. I mean, Derek Carr has been on fire, an early season MVP candidate. But the Bears' defense really stood tall yesterday.
Well, you know, Derek Carr and Khalil Mack are still very close friends from their days in Oakland. But Khalil Mack, not so happy that Gruden traded him away. So he let that be known yesterday.
Credit All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at the Chargers-Browns game, a big one yesterday. Brandon Staley, the head coach of the Chargers, may be changing the way that we think about fourth down decisions.
Ooh.
That up next when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
In the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And there were some outstanding NFL games yesterday, but perhaps none better than the Chargers and the Browns, the showdown. And you had Justin Herbert and Baker Mayfield dueling back Ooh. And forth, a high-scoring affair.
Almost a combined 100 points. I mean, talk about crazy.
Well, it did feel like one of those games where the team with the ball last would win, but that was not the case. The Browns had the ball with a chance to come down and win, and they did not convert. But really, the thing that stood out to me in that game was the Chargers' willingness to consistently gamble, to consistently go for it on fourth down, I mean, in situations that coaches never go for it, where it's assured that someone's going to punt or kick a field goal, but the Chargers were willing to make the bets, and that might have been the difference in the game. Coaching really does matter. These decisions are big on the field.
And what do you think led to Brian Staley being so brazen with his fourth down calls?
Well, a combination of factors, but I'm going to highlight that he's got a really great quarterback who knows how to execute well on fourth down. Now, they handed the ball off on at least one of those fourth down plays, so it's the whole team offense. So, one, it's confidence in the offense.
Sure.
But, two, I think there was also recognition that his defense was not playing well, that the Browns were scoring almost at will, and that you have to take advantage. You can't lose a series there. It's almost like a tennis match. You've got to hold serve here because the Browns are going to come down and get another touchdown and the game can get away from you. So it was a time, that several times, when he felt he had to take some shots, he had to take some chances, and it clearly paid off.
No, it really did. And what I love about that is you're just talking about situational football. The Chargers are a stacked team. Their defense was not playing well. The Browns put 42 points on them yesterday. Now, Mayfield did have a comeback game with 305 yards passing and two touchdowns. But, you know, last week, Baker Mayfield, in a 14-7 win over Minnesota, he was 15 of 33 for 155 yards, no touchdowns, and a 59.5 passer rating. You know what that did? His two touchdown passes on the whole season, this is before the game yesterday, was tied for 31st in the NFL with Jacoby Brissett and Davis Mills. Good gosh. So credit Baker Mayfield.
That was last week.
That was last week. That was before the Chargers game. So he came back and had a much better game. But still, you just look at how things change so dramatically from week to week. And give Kevin Stefanski credit, because that late game clock management, it can create nutty scenarios, you know, just where the offense doesn't want to score, which was the case with the Chargers yesterday. You had Austin Eckler taking a knee before the goal line. He did not want to score yet and give the Browns that time. But the defense wants to give up the touchdown. So the Browns ended up carrying Eckler into the end zone with about a minute 30 left. And while that didn't pay off, I mean, the Browns did get the ball back. They were not able to convert. To me, that's the right call in that situation. Just like Brandon Staley had been making amazing calls on fourth down. Credit Kevin Stefanski for going back at him.
Well, again, another unconventional decision. And I don't think I've ever really seen that. I guess I've seen a couple of cases where they've let somebody run into the end zone. But to actually
carry the
opposing running back into the end zone, giving him a touchdown. But here was the math. And there's analytics behind it, of course. So from the Chargers' perspective, the logical play was to run the ball or take a knee and run the clock down and then kick a field goal that would have been 95-plus percent. And then the Browns would have lost. It was 95%. The other side of that is the Chargers could have scored quickly and given the Browns a chance, but there was a better than 95% chance the Browns would come down. I mean,
especially the way that the defense was playing for the Chargers yesterday.
Right. So it was the right decision to try not to score, but the Browns certainly got a hold of him, dragged him into the end zone, and the Browns had one last shot. The thing that is notable, so Baker Mayfield, going back to him, you talk about his inconsistency.
I think he's been a disappointment this season. I'm going to say it.
Well, interestingly, as I was reading today, and it struck me when I read it, that in two of his wins against the Texans and you mentioned the Vikings, he did not look impressive. And his two losses against the Chiefs and the Chargers, he looked very impressive. So there is an inconsistency to him that the Browns really have got to wrestle with. But what I really raised a red flag for me yesterday was the fact that he had the time to come down.
Yes.
I mean, if you just invert it, you'd want Justin Herbert in those final minute and a half. And you have this feeling that Herbert could have delivered.
With a minute 30?
But
absolutely.
Mayfield did not. In fact, the Browns really didn't get very far down the field. It was a very frustrating drive. They did not handle that drive very well. They did not manage the clock well. And so that's sort of the difference between being a good, maybe above average quarterback, but not an elite top seven or eight quarterback, the kind whom you look at in the final minute of a game and say, oh yeah, he's the guy who will take us down the field. He will execute that 2 minute drive. I don't think anyone can look at Baker Mayfield that way right now.
No, and that's actually where his mistakes are made, in the 2 minute drives or the hurry up offense or when the game is on the line. And I'm, you know, here he is in playing in his fifth year. I mean, they've got to make a decision on his contract. I'm sure they're going to keep him as a franchise quarterback, but I don't know that he's the one that can deliver them, because they certainly have. I mean, Nick Chubb is, I mean, enough said. He's crazy good. They've got a complementary defense that is outstanding. They've got a set of receivers. They've got the pieces. And I just don't think, I don't see Mayfield. At this point, he should be very well developed this far into his career.
Well, the Browns do have a tough decision on him. He's year four. They've exercised his year five option. So they have him this year and next. But as we've all known, the expectation always is that you sign in year four, say that this would be the time. Lamar Jackson, same thing looming here. I mean, I remember when Dak Prescott wasn't signed at this moment, there were howls that he wasn't signed. Well, Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield are at this point, and it's hard to make a decision on Baker Mayfield because he's shown some flashes, But boy, to give him franchise money and make your big bet on him at this point is really tough. I think they would want to defer this decision as long as they can, with the hope that they see it, that they can get to a place of conviction on him, because right now it's just too much inconsistency.
I think that the team, I think the locker room, he's really got the locker room. They seem to really love him and have his back, but I just don't think he is your big moment quarterback. I haven't seen it from him yet.
Hmm. All right, let's talk about the fact that the Bills had their big statement game yesterday over the Chiefs, and what that does, it's really an interesting dynamic. When we talk about the AFC West, the Chargers with a monster win over the Browns, coming off their win last week, Chiefs fall, and of course everybody anointed the Chiefs as the presumed Super Bowl team from the AFC at the beginning of the year. Raiders fall, Broncos fall. It's just amazing how quickly the dynamics change. Just a couple weeks ago, you had the Broncos and the Raiders undefeated, and with the Chiefs and the Chargers playing so well, they were far and away the best division in football, and of course, the tide has turned just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, next week, Denver and Las Vegas will face each other, so that's going to beat up the division even further.
Yep.
It's still a tough division, but that's why, as a Cradle Raiders fan, when the Raiders were at the top of the division undefeated, I took a picture of that bracket, and I'm just going to savor that, because those things don't last. When you have the Raiders at 3-0 and the Chiefs at the bottom of that division at 1-3, I mean, what a difference a week makes.
Well, it just highlights the parity in the NFL
as
well.
Which is exciting, honestly.
You like the parity.
I like the parity.
Yeah. I mean, here we are through 5 weeks, and 17 of the league's 32 teams have a record of either 3-2 or 2-3. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the teams are in that middle pack. And if the Colts beat the Ravens tonight, and that's a long shot, but if the Colts were to beat the Ravens tonight, the number will jump to 19 teams. So, yes, this is a league of parity, and you see it now in the AFC West. You see it across the league, to be sure. All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance. We're going to shift gears to college football. We're going to get a chance.
Oh, what a the Saturday that turned college football up a side of downa.
It is a good time to talk some college football, and a good time to talk to Hudson Mason. He's an ESPN college football analyst, and we'll go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line, and we're going to ask, we'll ask Hudson Mason.
Former Georgia quarterback.
Yeah, we got to ask him about his Georgia Bulldogs and how he feels about Stetson Bennett at quarterback, who's filled in pretty well. And then if Georgia's number one now, clearly the number one, who really should be number two? Is he happy with Iowa and Cincinnati at 2-3?
Who'd have thunk it?
All right, it'll be Hudson Mason up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping or on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly at O'ReillyAutoParts.com. O'ReillyAuto.com. All right. Joining us now is ESPN college football analyst Hudson Mason. We're going out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. Hudson, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us on a great Monday after an extraordinary Saturday college football.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How are y'all doing?
We're doing great. Let's just begin with Georgia, because, of course, you played there. You know the franchise so well. They are now number one in the country. Do they deserve to be there? Are they far and away the best team?
The answer to the first part of the question is yes, they do deserve to be there. As far as them being far and away the best team in the country, I don't know how far and away it is. I do think they are the best team. I don't know quite the margin between them and Alabama, even despite Alabama losing this week. I've seen this happen so many times where – you know, not a lot, but when Alabama loses a game, Nick Saban finds a way to use it as internal motivation. And I just think Alabama is going to be better for it over the long haul. I think they're going to be more motivated. I think they're going to be more focused. So I still put Georgia and Alabama in kind of a stratosphere of their own in college football with, you know, Iowa and Cincinnati and Oklahoma in kind of tier two.
You know, Hudson, I agree with you about Alabama. They seem to adjust well and come back beautifully after a defeat. And they have been teetering on defeats with that game with Florida and several consecutive three and outs on their offense and their defense not able to stop. But your Bulldogs, you all have won three in a row, and that defense has just looked absolutely incredible. You've given up two touchdowns this entire season. What is going to happen in the quarterback situation? Obviously, Stetson Bennett did a great job this weekend against Auburn. When is JT Daniels returning, and is that going to be – what is that going to do for Georgia? How will this impact the role that Georgia is currently on?
Yeah, it is a huge decision. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't right now, halfway through the college football season, foresee any bigger impactful decision that will impact a single team's future in college football this year, like Kirby Smart's decision about the quarterback spot will impact Georgia's national championship hopes. I mean, it's the most important decision that he has to get right. And, you know, I personally think that they need JT Daniels back for the postseason. I think they need him back to win a national championship. I think Stetson Bennett is more than capable of winning you the games in your regular season. As we've seen, you know, not only this week, but against Arkansas last week. I mean, this is a kid who's a former walk-on, but don't let that label fool you. He's you know, an underdog story who has really, really overachieved that label as a walk-on. So, you know, you're right. Georgia's defense is really, really, really good. And I think most years we've seen, you got to have a high-powered offense to win a national championship.
Yep.
I think this year's different. I think their defense can win them and carry them to a national championship because I don't see a 2019 LSU offense this year in college football or a 2018 offense like Clemson had or last year for Alabama. So I think it is unique to this year that Georgia's defense is so good and so capable of carrying them all the way.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I mean, you mentioned Clemson, who's dropped out of the top 25. We've got Iowa sitting at number two, Cincinnati sitting at number three. I mean, what a crazy, crazy weekend. Speaking of crazy weekend in college football, what impressed you the most in the Red River Showdown with Oklahoma and Texas? Or what frustrates you the most as a Longhorn fan? Break that down for us, Hudson.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing for me was the gutsy decision that Lincoln Riley had to bench Spencer Rattler and to move on to his backup quarterback. And, you know, as it stands right now, I don't know if Spencer Rattler is the long-term answer at Oklahoma, which is crazy to think. But this is now back-to-back years in which Spencer Rattler has been pulled or benched mm-hmm. in the Red River rivalry. So, you know, I think Oklahoma's got, you know, more problems than just the quarterback position.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, if you find the right quarterback, your quarterback can overcome some of the other deficiencies that surround the team or surround that position. And it seems as though Oklahoma's backup quarterback was able to come in and just move the ball and make big plays. So I think that was the most impressive thing. That's not an easy decision to make in the middle of a huge game when you're down. I think from Texas standpoint, just it's got to be so gut-wrenching to start that fast and to have such a beautifully executed game plan so quick and to be up and to just look like the better team for 3.5 quarters and to not be able to finish it out. So, you know, that would have been a huge win in the first season for Steve Sarkisian and what a, you know, kind of stamp of I'm here and, you know, I don't want to say Texas being back, but just kind of making your presence known that maybe this Texas team was different than the Texas teams of the past, but unfortunately they weren't able to get that done.
We're talking to Hudson Mason, former Georgia quarterback, ESPN college football analyst. So I want to go back to Spencer Rattler because coming into the season, of course, it was all the Heisman hype around him. Possibly he was going to be the number one draft pick in the NFL draft next year. Now he's benched. I mean, what will happen next week? And then secondly, do you think he should transfer at the end of this year? Could you envision that before entering the NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way he's the number one overall pick right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he just hasn't put good stuff on tape. So I would say that's been thrown by the wayside. At this point, you know, he's going to be playing in college next year. It's just a matter of where. And if you get beat out and Oklahoma goes on to have success this year with somebody other than Spencer Rattler at the quarterback position, then, yeah, I think all signs point to him having to find a new home outside of Oklahoma or outside of that football team. So, you know, this is I can't really pinpoint why Spencer Rattler hasn't been successful. But I don't know him personally, and I don't really know anybody that knows him. You know, so I don't know if it's a work ethic. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but it is obvious to see that something is just off. You know, and it doesn't take some brilliant mad scientist to see that and recognize that this Oklahoma team this year is just not clicking at the same pace and the same beat that they normally have been under Baker Mayfield and Jalen Hurts and, you know, other really good teams and quarterbacks. So, unfortunately, sometimes quarterbacks get too much blame, but also, you know, quarterbacks, they get too much credit sometimes. So I don't know where Spencer Rattler falls in the point of finger right now with some of their problems, but all I can tell you is everybody noticed that when that backup quarterback came in, man, they moved the ball.
Yeah, I mean, 66 yards on the first play. I mean, that was incredible for a touchdown. That was absolutely nuts. I think that's so true. Hudson, let me ask you about Cincinnati, who is sitting there this week in the AP Top 25 at number 3. Luke Fickle has, I mean, done an outstanding job with that program. But the ACC is definitely having more of a down year, and they beat up Temple 52-3. Is there a way for Cincinnati to be one of the Final Four teams if they continue to win in an impressive fashion, even coming out of the AAC?
I still think it's going to be a stretch.
Yeah.
Even given the fact that they have the impressive win over Notre Dame, they really need Notre Dame to run the table and finish strong so that win looks even more impressive. But I just think what the committee is going to look at the end of the year is strength of schedule, which this year is a little better than last year's, there's no doubt. But when you're comparing their strength of schedule to, you know, maybe a one-loss Ohio State team at the end of the year, or a one-loss Iowa, or maybe Oregon's not a great example, but even a Pac-12 champion like Oregon, yeah, who has, you know, one loss, and it could be a really, really bad loss to Stanford. But I just think there's going to be a couple other teams out there that you're going to look at and you're going to go, okay, you know, this Ohio State team, for example, has one loss. Yeah. But it's to an Oregon team that hypothetically won the Pac-12. I think in that case, there's going to be a couple one-loss teams that the committee is going to look at and just reward a conference championship from a big group, from a big conference, and probably a strength of schedule that's a little more competitive. So I think Cincinnati's as they sit right now, they seem to be getting more talk than they did last year. But my prediction is I still think they're going to be on the outside looking in at the beginning of the year. Unless, you know, Oklahoma loses and Ohio State adds another loss. They need a little bit of help right now.
Okay.
Hutch, we got about 1 minute remaining. Want to get your take on Iowa's big win over Penn State.
Yeah. Really good defense and probably one of the best offensive lines in the country. And it was a huge win, and it is weird to see Iowa number 2 in the country.
I agree.
I'll say that because it's bizarre. Usually Iowa gets to about this point in the year, and they're undefeated, and they have kind of a huge letdown loss. But Kirk Ferentz has those Hawkeyes rolling, and they've got an easy schedule on the rest of the way out. Their most competitive game left is really Wisconsin. So as long as they don't slip up, it should be them, Ohio State, the Big Ten championship.
Crazy.
Who would have thought it?
I love it.
That's Hudson Mason. Hudson, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate the thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
It's the boss.
In the gloss.
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, now let's go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. Progressive is making it easier to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Joining us now is Charlie Pulillo, baseball analyst and the sage voice on our Houston radio station. Charlie, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Meteorologist for the moment. Tornado watch up here until 9 o'clock tonight. Until the bottom of the third inning, it looked like the Astros were just going to blow through the White Sox and sweep, but an extended stay with Game 4 now pushed back to tomorrow afternoon. But it's supposed to be lovely, upper 60s, 0% chance of rain, so we'll see for which team it's worth the wait.
Sorry to hear that. Yes, Charlie Pulillo is on the ground in Chicago where the game has been delayed or postponed. But let's go back to the headlines. Ryan Tepera's accusations that the Astros might be sign-stealing again. Does that just amp up the temperature in this series?
You know, the Astros are trying to fry the biggest fish, right? Reclaimed their division title. They want to reclaim the American League championship and then go get a second World Series. So you wouldn't think you need any extra logs on the fire to get after it, but Martin Maldonado tweeted out, well, never hurts to have a little extra motivation. So if Tepera even gets in the game tomorrow, I'm sure it'll cross the minds of some. Without some sort of evidence, we know the backstory and what happened 2017 into 2018, but I really think it was, if not irresponsible, just kind of a little whiny, and it's very superficially ignorant to suggest, well, you know, they hit well in the two games at home, and the Astros did score six runs in the first three innings of Game 3, so the White Sox, a way better team at home than on the road this year, so the idea that, well, if you're good at home and not great on the road, you must be cheating on the home, at home, that would make the White Sox the kettle, I guess, or the pot calling the kettle black.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, Charlie. Talk about the game yesterday where we saw Grandal way inside of the baseline. Now I'm onto a completely different series here. I'm sorry. I'm losing my mind here. Yuli trying to throw to home. Grandal clearly outside the baseline on the grass, out of the bounds of what would be legal. Hits his shoulder. The throw goes crazy. Is this adding to more of the mess in this series? And did you think that was the right call? Should it have been overturned? And what did that look like to you?
It shouldn't. As I watched it live, the natural thought for me, I think, like for most, was, whoa, he's inside. That's interference. Place the runners at first and third. The batter is out. But the 45 feet before you get to the path, the second half of the run between home plate to first base, the phrase being used is declare your base path. And it's not as if he started and then cut a 45-degree angle or a 30-degree angle. Certainly didn't throw out a hip or a shoulder to try to disrupt the play. So being on the inside, he's fine there the first 45 feet. I really think, and how bizarre was it that in both games yesterday, you had a crazy call that I think shines a light on, certainly in the Astros-White Sox case, a rule that needs to be changed. And you could argue the same with the play, the ball deflecting off Hunter Renfro over the fence. And up, dead ball, ground rule double, cost the Rays a run that would have given them the lead in the 13th. In the Astros case, all right, so if a guy's on the inside, even more so for a right-handed hitter, and Grandal, while a switch hitter, was batting lefty that time, but for a right-handed hitter, it's natural. The path to first base, we all learned in, high school geometry, the fastest distance between two points is a straight line. It's a straighter line to start in fair territory, and then at 45 feet, you need to get in foul territory, or if the throw hits you, you're liable to be put out. But a throw from first to home, that rule does not apply. You could argue, well, why not? But how about, look, if you're on the fair side of the foul line, okay, but if you're on the grass, that's just too far, and you're automatically out. Or at least if you get hit by a throw, then you are treated as if you are hit by a throw from the catcher if you're at all in fair territory. So a rule I don't recall ever seeing put into practice with the throw first, nailing the batter coming up at him, coming his way up the line. But within the rules, unless there was clear intent, it was adjudicated correctly by the umpires.
Wow, that is not what I thought you would say, but that is great info to know. And the next thing I was going to ask you about was Tampa Bay. Did they get robbed last night when they were stung by that controversial ground rule double in game three? Like Hunter Renfroe misplaying that ball. Like, what are your feelings on that? Does that need to be changed by MLB?
Like the world at large, Carla, isn't there like some sort of common sense corollary that we could use once in a while? In that instance, a 3-2 count with two out, the runner on first is going on the pitch. I guess we could allow for the possibility he'd just trip and fall down coming around third. But on that ball, he's definitely going to score. I don't think there's any sort of arbitrary umpire judgment that you'd say, whoa, whoa, whoa. The umpires actually prefer the way it is, at least the ump in charge in that game, Sam Holbrook. You know, the umpires have enough on the plate, and if you're asking us to make judgment calls, a la with Gurriel, hey, am I supposed to legislate intent? But there used to be the idea that the umpires had some discretion on a ground rule double. If it was patently obvious that a runner would get an additional base, well, you could say, okay, you get that additional base, but it just became a dead ball. So the runner had to go back to third. Kiermaier settles for a double. And, you know, you never know about the domino effect that right. If the Rays score, Red Sox scored two in the bottom of the inning
exactly.
to win. But if they're down a run as opposed to a tie game, that might be pitched too differently. You know, you're facing the pressure of, now we have to score, as opposed to another free roll of the dice. We know we score, we win. We don't score, well, we go to the 14th inning. So it was just a crazy, crazy twofer between those games. I don't know that Major League Baseball will tweak either rule, but it really should certainly the rule that involved the Astros and the White Sox, and I guess you could have some debate as to whether umpires can say, hey, the base runner would get three bases, or you know what, the batter, that would have been a triple instead of a double. I'm guessing they won't touch that one.
We're talking to Charlie Polillo. He is a baseball savant, and he is in Chicago, where the game has been postponed between the Astros and the White Sox. But let's shift to the two games that will be played tonight. We've got the Red Sox matchup against the Rays again. Tell us about this pitching matchup. You've got Rodriguez against Colin McHugh.
Yeah, not exactly Cy Young against the runner-up. I mean, it's just what the Rays do. I mean, they were clearly the best team over 162. They've started three rookies, and now they go with the journeyman Colin McHugh as the opener, and then they'll just patchwork it from there. Rodriguez, meanwhile, for the Red Sox, an ERA about 5. So watch it be a 2-1 game. You know, so far this series, it's just a reminder that in a best of 5, there's no such thing as an upset, that a bad team can beat a good team in a short series. So a good team beating a better team, you know, Fenway is going to be going nutso tonight. It's not so much that the Astros will be rooting for the Red Sox, and it would be foolish to presume the Astros are going to close out the White Sox. But if you're the Astros, you're thinking, hey, we're in the ALCS starting Friday night. The Red Sox advance. The Astros would have home field advantage over them as opposed to having to go down to St. Petersburg. So purely selfishly, I'm hoping it goes 5 because decisive 5th games or decisive 7th games are one of the great things in sport. So ditto for Dodgers-Giants, hoping that goes the distance. And in that rivalry, for this to be the first time in California they played after the full regular season schedule, give us all the decisive games we can get, even at Braves-Brewers stink fest of offense. Let Milwaukee win game 4 to push that one to a 5th game.
So, Charlie, who do you like tonight at Dodger Stadium? You've got Scherzer versus Alex Wood, former Dodgers. Who do you have in that game tonight?
In a single game, I'll lean with the Hall of Famer, Scherzer, though he's been touched now 3 straight starts, only charged with 1 run, but Dave Roberts hooked him in the 5th inning, and it worked out. Talk about a second-guesser's delight if it hadn't, after he'd been hit in those last 2 regular season starts, after before that having an ERA under 1. But in a one-game situation, no surprise if the Giants win and you throw in the angle of the ex-Dodgers throwing against them. But if the Dodgers offense breaks out, I just think 1-8, they're better than the Giants. If both teams play to equal levels of their potential in the end, and it's probably disrespectful to the Giants, who won 107 games. They beat the Dodgers 10-9 in the regular season series. But I wouldn't leave Dodgers. Wild card is missing Max Muncy is a big blow to the middle of their lineup. But if we're playing roulette, and, well, I guess it wouldn't be Dodger red, would it? Let's go red and blue on the roulette wheel. I'd put my chip on Dodger blue and spin the wheel. Let's see what happens.
All right. And then the other series, Braves winning today 3-0 over the Brewers. Braves have now a 2-1 series lead. Do you think they're in command now? Do you see that one finishing out for the Braves?
Well, David, I don't know about that Savant stuff, but I'll give you this. Take it to the bank. If the Brewers don't score again in this series, they're not advancing. I mean, they've been
brilliant.
Shut out 2 days in a row. They really didn't have a very good offense all season long. Braves get a crack in Atlanta to finish it off, and if not, going up to Milwaukee. So give me the team with two opportunities to win one game over the one that can only advance by winning the next two. I mean, there are all kinds of examples of teams coming from 2-1 down to win a best of five. But the Brewers, unless they can come out of that offensive coma, Braves were in the NLCS last year. Dodgers beat them in seven in the NLCS last year. Rays and Astros went seven in the ALCS last year. Right now, I'd say it's only the Rays that aren't looking real good to get back to baseball's version of the Final Four.
And, Charlie, what are your feelings with the ALDS in Chicago? You're there. You're on the ground. You were at the game yesterday. Was it a momentum swing, or do you see the Astros able to pull this thing out?
It was a momentum swing, which is great until you suddenly no longer have that momentum, right? The Astros are up 2-0 in the series. They lead 5-1 in the third inning, quieting a crowd that just wanted to be going crazy last night, having its first home game since 2008, first postseason home game since 2008. And then suddenly the White Sox start hitting. You throw in a couple of crazy turns of events. So the Astros' idea of momentum is with the day off, they're coming back with Lance McCullers, who totally throttled the White Sox in Game 1. Right, he now has 4 days rest, so they made the interesting decision going with McCullers.
Yeah.
If you win, great, but now McCullers would be unavailable until Game 3 of the ALCS. Mm. But don't count your chickens, right? If you have your ace on rest with a chance to go for the kill shot on the road, do it. If they don't, they'll have Framber Valdez, who'd have his normal rest ahead of Game 5. Astros get up early tomorrow. I wouldn't be surprised if they win a 10-4 type game, kind of like the Dodgers-Giants. If both teams play at the same level relative to their abilities, the Astros have the better team. Not head and shoulders, but I think they have the better team. I guess since my pre-series pick was Astros in 5, I probably should stick to that for consistency's sake.
And we don't call you Savant Charlie for nothing, so we're counting on you, Charlie.
There
oh,
it is.
Plenty would say for nothing.
All right, Charlie Polillo, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Deep dish doggy bags for both of you.
There
thank
we go.
You.
All right, when we come back, we're going to ask the gloss here. Her advice for Shad Khan, what he should do with Urban Meyer. That up next when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
And the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And the Jaguars had a sort of distracting week. We talked about Urban Meyer previously and his video, the viral video that went out when he was enjoying a little time with a female friend, a cute blonde there.
Wasn't that his grandchild?
He was spending time with his grandkids. And now the question is, what do you do about it, right? It's now been chronicled. He's offered his apology. He apparently has gone into the locker room and talked to different of his players and tried to explain what has happened. And the reports out of Jacksonville are that there were lots of snickering and giggles and laughs that, well, Urban has been Urban. But what does Shad Khan do?
I'll tell you what he is doing. He's staying the course with Urban Meyer.
He is looking like he's going to do that, yes.
Well, it's been said. And I think it's a mistake. I mean, again, I don't own an NFL team, but I think Shad Khan, for all that I have seen in his record, he is a great owner, and he's very receptive. And I think, you know, he's one of two minority owners in the NFL. And this is his chance to really have a voice and show that, hey, there needs to be more owners like me who do the right thing. And while what Urban Meyer did last week in having this video come out where a college co-ed's grinding up into him and then his hand is going up into her, all kinds of stuff, is that, quote, a fireable offense? No, probably not, standing on its own. It's disgusting. It shows no leadership. It does not give him credibility in that locker room because he's looking at his players and saying, Don't put yourself in compromising positions. Don't do it. This is the NFL. This is how it rolls. Yet he did exactly what he's telling them not to do.
Yeah, it does seem to undermine his voice if he's not following the very direction that he's giving to the players.
Exactly. And on top of it, you know, I think what is really bad about it is he apologized for, quote, being a distraction. Why don't you apologize that you didn't do the right thing as a coach in the NFL? Your team, which 0-4 went into that game, or it went into the game 0-3, the Thursday night football game on national television against Cincinnati, and lost a hard-fought game that the Jaguars almost won. I mean, it was a tight game. Their flight left at 1 a.m. to land at 4 a.m. in Jacksonville. Obviously, a solemn plane ride home. You're now 0-4 with 19 straight losses, and he doesn't get on that plane. I don't know. I've never heard of a head coach who doesn't travel with their team. And your excuse is you're staying there to be with your grandchildren, go to dinner with your grandchildren. Well, I don't know how old they are, but who eats dinner at 11:30 at night? And clearly, we saw pictures and videos. You were not with your grandchildren. So while what he did in that with that girl, that's a whole issue he's got to deal with, Miss Shelley, good luck to you. He let his team down, not only by being a distraction, but by what he did, showing what it is not to be a man and not traveling with that team. They weren't important enough that he was on that flight.
All right, you heard it from the boss. She says, Shad Khan, it's time to cut bait.
Yes, it is. Cut your losses now.
All right, we'll be right back on the Sports Map Radio Network.